WCRI's Classical Kids Hour is sponsored in part by the Newport Music Festival with generous support from the Carter Family Charitable Trust.
This is WCRI's Classical Kids Hour. Whether you're a child, teen, young adult, or just young at heart, we hope to show you how amazing classical music is. You probably listen to classical music all the time. It's everywhere. In your favorite cartoons, TV shows, movies, video games, and so much more. During this show, you will enjoy lots and lots of wonderful classical music. Now, let's join our hosts, Jamie and Pamela, as they get ready to take you on a musical journey into the world of classical music. Oh, we better go. I hear the orchestra getting ready for today's show.
Good morning, Pamela.
Good morning, Jamie. Now, before we start, I want to make sure that we thank our sponsors for doing this wonderful show.
You caught me.
Thank you to the Carter Family Charitable Trust for their generous support of the inaugural season of this wonderful broadcast. And this week, thank you to Andrew Liatzos.
Winter made a return this week, and just as we're getting ready for summer.
I know, there was that little warm spell, and it tricked us. So, Jamie, this week, I thought that we should listen to something uplifting.
So, big and fun?
Yes! Handel's Water Music.
Music on the water?
Music on the water, yes. So, Handel's Water Music was written for fireworks that are sent shooting into the air from a barge on the water.
Ooh.
So the musicians were on land playing for the king and queen, and lots of people from the court came, and regular people too. So this is the Baroque period. Handel wrote this music in 1717.
Huh, almost 300 years ago.
Almost exactly 300 years ago. So you can imagine that's a long time ago, and yet the music is just as fun today as it was then.
Don't you play music for the fireworks in Newport?
Yes, Jamie. There's always been a huge tradition of music for the 4th of July and fireworks all over America. So the Newport Music Festival began with a concert last year at King Park, and we're performing there again this year on the 4th of July.
I understand. So let's listen to Anne Racklin and her story of Mr. Handel's fireworks.
Believe that there was once a king of England who was extremely rude to his courtiers. His name was George Augustus, and he was very bad-tempered and not much liked. What would you say if I told you that he used to fly into tempers and take off his wig and kick it round the room, screaming his favourite word, poo? Oh, yes, I can hear you saying. This is another of Anne's fairy stories, a legend, perhaps. There'll probably be a magician in it, too, maybe a witch as well. But you would be wrong, for this story is not a legend. It is true, even though some of it is hard to believe. Imagine, one day in church, this King of England I'm telling you about talked loudly in German all the way through the sermon. The poor preacher was so upset and humiliated that he burst into tears and rushed headlong out of the church. And what if I told you that when people made graceful compliments and speeches to him, the king often replied by staring them in the face and turning his back on them with his favourite rude remark, "Poo, poo!" Yes, so many courtiers suffered from this boorish treatment by the king that they formed their own club, which they called the Rump Steak Club, for obvious reasons. Although King George II may have been rude to his courtiers, he showed great bravery on the battlefield. In one battle, his horse took fright and carried him straight to the front line, where he dismounted and continued fighting alongside his foot soldiers. Fighting against the French at the Battle of Dettingen, the 61-year-old king was under heavy fire. "Don't tell me of the danger," he cried. "I'll be even with them. Now, boys, for the honor of England, fire and behave brave, and the French will run." He was right. They did. And King George came home victorious. Afterwards, on any day of celebration or feast day, rather than wearing his fine robes of state, King George insisted on appearing in the old coat and hat he had worn on the day of the battle. The people cheered him wildly, even if he did look shabby and tatty. When the wars of the Austrian succession were over, a peace treaty was signed at Aix-la-Chapelle in October 1748. The peace treaty delighted the king. "This is good news indeed," he said. "We must celebrate the end of the wars. I think we should have a party, something rather special, a bit different." He gave it a lot of thought. What should it be? Something out of doors, perhaps. Some huge event that will really please everyone. "Yes, that's it. We'll have it in the park. Upper St. James's Park. Green Park, it is called. We'll have a celebration that will make a big bang for victory." A big bang? Of course. That was it. The king had an idea. "We'll have a firework display. That will impress everybody." And he sent for the Duke of Montague, the Master of the Ordnance. He was in charge of the cannons. Then he ordered Charles Frederick to come to the court. Mr. Frederick had a most impressive title. He was Controller of His Majesty's Fireworks, as for war and as for triumph. The king gave the two men their orders. "I want this to be a magnificent display. See that there are big stands and a beautiful pavilion. Have it designed by the best man there is. I want it to be tremendous, huge, fantastic. Well, what are you both waiting for? Get on with it." Lord Montague went straight to work. He sent to Paris for a designer called Chevalier Servandoni, a most artistic man, whom he commissioned to design the pavilion and the stand for the fireworks. Signor Servandoni was delighted. He loved creating. "Oh, it will be charming, absolutely charming. We'll have arches and steps, a kind of palace. No, maybe a castle. Oh, leave it all to me. It will be lovely." Work started immediately. It was November the 7th, 1748. However, Signor Servandoni was so artistic that things never seemed quite lovely enough for him. He kept adding new bits and pieces, and so the pavilion was barely finished only one night before the fireworks were due to go off, on April the 26th, 1749. The king told Lord Montague that he wanted a royal salute of 101 guns to start the celebration. As Master of the Ordnance, this was easy to arrange. But then Lord Montague had an idea which would certainly make the celebration more unusual. He would have music during the evening, special music, composed for the occasion. Lord Montague decided to get in touch with Mr. Handel. George Frederick Handel was well known and loved and respected by all. Like the king, he came from Germany and had made his home in England during the reign of Queen Anne and her successor King George I, the father of the present king. Lord Montague remembered the splendid occasion on the River Thames when Mr. Handel had performed his water music to please the king's father. Who better to compose the music for the royal fireworks? It was a splendid idea. Lord Montague bowed low. This would be a moment to remember. He would tell His Majesty that he had asked Mr. Handel to compose the music for the royal fireworks, and the king would be delighted. He had a rude surprise when the king snarled, "Stupid idea. Not necessary. We don't want music." Lord Montague was horrified. He had already asked Handel to compose the music, and the composer had agreed. He attempted to persuade the king to change his mind. "Oh, very well," said the king reluctantly. "But all the instruments must be military ones. No fiddles. I don't want any fiddles. After all, this is a celebration of a victory. The music must be military. See to it, Montague. The Duke of Montague felt uneasy. He could not argue with the king, but how would Mr. Handel react to the royal command? No fiddles. He felt sure Mr. Handel would be most upset and would resent being told how to compose his music. Looking very worried, Lord Montague left the palace and hurried to see Mr. Handel. His worst fears were confirmed when the composer refused to cooperate. No one, not even the king, was going to tell him how to compose his own music. On the 28th of March, 1749, Lord Montague wrote a letter to Charles Frederick.
I think Handel now proposes to have but 12 trumpets and 12 French horns. At first, there was to have been 16 of each, and I remember I told the king so, who at that time objected to there being any music. But when I told him the quantity and number of martial music, he was better satisfied and said he hoped there would be no fiddles. Now Handel proposes to lessen the number of trumpets and to have violins. I don't at all doubt that when the king hears it, he will be very much displeased. If the thing was to be in such a manner as certainly to please the king, it ought to consist of no kind of instrument but martial instruments.
Handel was far from happy. He was even more displeased when, with the music already finished, Lord Montague began to argue with him about where to hold the first rehearsal. Handel said, "Green Park, of course. That's where the firework display is to be held, and that is where we will rehearse." Lord Montague disagreed. He had arranged for the rehearsal to take place in the Spring Gardens Vauxhall. He even went so far as to put an advertisement in the newspaper. The General Advertiser, 5th of April, 1749. The rehearsal of the music composed by Mr. Handel for the Royal Fireworks will be at the Spring Gardens, Vauxhall, on Monday night, April the 17th. Mr. Handel said, "No, it won't." Poor Lord Montague. Imagine having a stubborn composer on one side and a king who might take off his wig and yell "Pooh!" on the other. Mr. Handel was adamant, so Lord Montague had to put another advertisement in the paper. 13th of April, 1749. The public are desired to take notice that the rehearsal for the music for the Royal Fireworks, which was to have been in the Spring Gardens Vauxhall on Monday next the 17th, is put off. Things went from bad to worse. Lord Montague had to exercise all his tact and patience, not to mention his powers of persuasion. But finally, he managed to get Handel to agree. Breathing a deep sigh of relief, Lord Montague arranged that the rehearsal should take place on Monday the 24th of April. But to be on the safe side, he thought it might be wise to make sure that the Duke of Cumberland, who organized all the king's affairs, would be free to attend. On April the 17th, he wrote his thoughts down in a letter to Mr. Frederick.
The Duke of Cumberland, as I told you, intends to hear the rehearsal of Handel's music. You were saying you thought Monday was a good day for it. Monday is a drawing-room day, and therefore maybe would not be agreeable to the Duke. Would Saturday be a good day? Tuesday would be too near the firework day, I believe. But I think it would be quite right and well taken to know of the Duke what day he would like best, and ill taken if you do not. I wish you would contrive to see his secretary, Mr. Napier, tomorrow morning, and talk to him about it, and get him to know of the Duke what day he would like to have it.
But the next day, Lord Montague put another advertisement in the paper. The General Advertiser, 18th of April, 1749. The public may be assured that the rehearsal of the music composed by Mr. Handel for the Royal Fireworks is now fixed for Monday next, the 24th, at the Spring Gardens Vauxhall, to begin at 12 o'clock noon. No person to be admitted without tickets at half a crown each, and to admit one person only. N.B. Tickets given out for the 17th will be taken for the 24th. No sooner had the advertisement appeared in the paper than word came from the Duke of Cumberland that he would much rather come on a Friday. Monday was drawing-room day, and he was expecting visitors. practically tearing his hair out in aggravation, Lord Montague placed yet another advertisement in the General Advertiser. 19th of April, 1749. By special desire. The rehearsal in the Spring Garden Vauxhall of Mr. Handel's music for the Royal Fireworks, which was advertised for Monday the 24th of April, is now appointed for Friday next, the 21st, and to begin at 11 o'clock in the morning. N.B. Any persons who have already taken out tickets for the above-said rehearsal and cannot conveniently come to it on Friday next may have their money returned any time before that day at the several places where they purchase their tickets. And then, no, you can relax now. There were no more changes. Let us go to the rehearsal. No fireworks this time, at least not the kind you set off. Plenty of fireworks of the other kind, though. Quarrels, I mean. Imagine the scene. It is April the 21st, 1749. The place, the Spring Gardens, Vauxhall, London. 12,000 people have bought tickets to hear the music, specially written by Mr. Handel to celebrate the signing of the peace treaty at Aix-la-Chapelle. The orchestra is assembling. There are no strings, or violins, as the king calls them. His command has been obeyed. The instruments are all military ones. 9 trumpets, 9 horns, 24 oboes, 12 bassoons, a double bassoon, and 3 pairs of kettle drums, which Mr. Handel has borrowed from the Tower of London. People are milling about. Never before have so many people gathered in these gardens. More musicians are arriving and trying to push their way through the crowds. Tempers are getting frayed already. One musician is thrashing his way through the mob. Oh, look! He has accidentally knocked a footman's wig down over his eyes. The footman is furious. Oh, my word! I think he's going to start a fight. No, thank goodness there's Lord Montague. He's trying to calm everyone down. Wait, what's this I hear? There's trouble over at London Bridge. Let's go and see. Excuse me. My goodness, it's difficult getting through this crowd, isn't it? Look, let's head for that place over there. There you can see the bridge quite clearly. Good gracious, we who live in the 20th century think we know what traffic jams look like. Have you ever seen anything like this? Carriages everywhere, at a complete standstill. Look at those footmen trying to make room for their masters' coaches. And the coachmen are whipping the poor horses, who cannot move ahead, so they're snorting and rearing up in their harnesses, stamping and swaying. It's really dangerous. And people are losing their tempers. Just look at that footman. He's quite red in the face, and he's shaking his fist in the air. His carriage door is flying open. His master's coming out. My, he's angry. I say, he's drawn his sword. He's begun to fight with the gentleman from the carriage in front. Now the footman's been knocked to the ground. The swords are still clashing. It's getting worse. What's that? Who's pulling my sleeve? Oh, a little boy. What do you want, boy? Oh, Mr. Handel is starting the music. We'd better return to the gardens. The rehearsal is about to start. You can imagine what the newspapers said the next day. The General Advertiser, 22nd of April, 1749. Yesterday there was the brightest and most numerous assembly ever known at the Spring Garden Vauxhall on occasion of the rehearsal of Mr. Handel's music for the Royal Fireworks. Several footmen who attended their masters thither behaved very saucily and were justly corrected by the gentlemen for their insolence. And the reporter from the Gentleman's Magazine, April 1749, wrote, was performed at Vauxhall Gardens, the rehearsal of the music for the Royal Fireworks by a band of 100 musicians for an audience of above 12,000 persons. So great a resort occasioned such a stoppage on London Bridge that no carriage could pass for 3 hours. The footmen were so numerous as to obstruct the passage, so that a scuffle happened in which some gentlemen were wounded. The rehearsal over, everyone concerned gave a sigh of relief. At least nothing worse could happen on the day of the performance. Could it? 6 days later, April the 27th, the day of the first performance of the Royal Fireworks music, the day of the King's magnificent celebration. The crowds have been arriving since early morning. There are so many people, they have had to make an extra gap in the walls of the park. There aren't enough gates to let the huge crowd in. They all want to get a good view of the display. It is 6 p.m. In the centre, in front of the Queen's Library, stands the magnificent pavilion designed by Ser Vandoni. They say it was only finished last night, but it is beautiful. Look at that double sweeping staircase leading up to the big platform where the musicians are seated. Behind them is a grand archway, and on either side are two long raised walls, almost like a fort, with fireworks set all along them. The building is very suitably named Squibb Castle, but most people seem to call it the Machine. Nearby is an enclosure where the lords and ladies are sitting under scaffolding. They look very cramped, most uncomfortable, as if they can hardly move. I wouldn't like to be so near the fireworks either. Oh, listen, it is 7 o'clock, and I think the King is arriving. Yes, there he is, attended by their lordships, the Duke of Cumberland and the Duke of Montague. You can tell which one he is, the one with his fingers crossed. There's quite a crowd of nobles with him. I can see the Dukes of Richmond and Bedford there too. They have all come to look at the machine. The King is inspecting the guard now. I think he is pleased. The whole scene is very impressive. Oh, look! The King is pointing to the giant sun on top of the pavilion. I'm glad he noticed that. Signor Ser Vandoni went to so much trouble to get that in exactly the right place at the top. I don't think I have ever seen anything more exciting than the rows of brass cannons. See how they gleam! 101 of them! And there are 18 smaller ones over there. The big ones will fire the royal salute at the start of the entertainment. The little ones will be set off at certain moments in the music. It's all terribly exciting. The King looks very pleased with all the preparations. Why, he is actually giving a purse of gold to the officers. Now it is getting dark. How pretty it all looks. The candles are winking in the lanterns above the music stands. Let's go and find a good place to watch the fireworks. Not too close to the machine, I think. Look, there are some trees over there. We could climb up and have a perfect view. Here we are. Wait a minute. Someone's got here before us. Seems to be writing a letter. I wonder what he's saying. I'll take a look over his shoulder. His name is John Byram. He's writing to his wife. The letter is headed, April 27th, 1749, Green Park, 7 o'clock,
Thursday night before Squibb Castle. Walking about to see sights, I have retired to a stump of a tree to write a line to thee, lest anything should happen to prevent me by and by. They are all mad with Thanksgiving, Venetian jubilees, Italian fireworks and German pageantry. I have before my eyes such a concourse of people as to be sure I never have or never shall see again. The building erected on this occasion is indeed extremely neat and pretty and grand to look at, and a world of fireworks placed in an order that promises a most amazing scene when it's to be in full display. His Majesty and other great folk have been walking to see the machinery before the Queen's library. It's all railed about there where the lords and ladies are sat under scaffolding. It seems to be under confinement in comparison of us mobility, who enjoy the free air and walks here. It has been a very hot day, but there is a dark overcast of cloudiness, which may possibly turn to rain. And while I am now writing, it spits a little and grows into a menacing appearance of rain, which, if it pass not over, will disappoint expectations. My intention, if it be fair, is to gain a post under one of the trees in St. James's Park, where the fireworks are in front, and where the tail of a rocket, if it should fall, cannot but be hindered by the branches from doing any mischief to them who are sheltered under them. So I shall now draw away to be ready for near shelter from either watery or fiery rain. Watery or fiery rain? I think it might be best to let Mr. Byron find his place of shelter and return to our own century. Things are about to become dangerous in 1749. Well, the fireworks did not come up to expectations. Some, it is true, soared triumphantly into the air, but others just fizzled out. Some of them didn't light at all. The crowd became very impatient as the soldiers tried to help Signor Servandoni's workmen to get them going. Suddenly, a sheet of flames flared up, and the whole wooden building caught fire and blazed furiously. The crowd panicked. Women screamed and fainted, and several people were injured as they fell and were trodden underfoot. Signor Servandoni watched in horror as the huge figures of Britannia and Peace and the King fell into the flames, showering sparks in all directions. Tears ran down his cheeks as he watched the giant sun, his crowning glory of the exhibit, burst into flames and topple to the ground. All his lovely work ruined. His tears quickly turned to anger. It was all the fault of that inefficient fool of an Englishman, he thought. And, burning with indignation and rage, almost as hot as the flames that were consuming his masterpiece, he sought out Mr. Charles Frederick, the controller of the fireworks, and, drawing his sword, accused him of ruining the whole show. But, as the newspapers reported the next day, he was disarmed and taken into custody, but discharged soon after on asking pardon before the Duke of Cumberland. John Byron managed to finish his letter late that night. 11 o'clock, all over and somewhat in an hurry, by an accidental fire at one end of the building, which, whether it be extinguished, I know not, for I left before I could find out that I might finish my letter, which otherwise I could not have done. I saw every fine show in front, and I believe no mischief was done by the rockets, though some pieces of above 1.5 pounds fell here and there. Some the next tree to me, and being on the watch, I perceived one fall, and after a tug with 4 or 5 competitors, I carried it off. My dear, I shall be too late if I don't conclude. I'm all of a sweat with a hasty walk for time to write. And now I'll take some refreshment and drink all your health. Everything I have told you is true. We can read all the reports in the newspapers of the time. John Byrom was a writer, and the letter was found among his papers. The programme and many of the documents can be seen today in the British Museum. There were many more performances of the music for the Royal Fireworks, but perhaps the most important one of all was the performance that Handel gave indoors, without any fireworks at all. Mr. Thomas Coram was a kind man. He lived in Rotherhithe in South London. Walking about the streets in his neighbourhood, he constantly came across tiny babies and very little children left by the wayside to starve. Their parents were too poor to keep them, and so they would put them out into the street in the hope that some wealthy person would take pity on them and give them a home. More often than not, they died. Thomas Coram decided to do something to help them. For 14 years he worked hard, raising money for a building to house the poor children. When the building was finished, it was named the Foundling Hospital. Hundreds of homeless infants found in the streets were taken and cared for in the Foundling Hospital. One of its windows had a large tray where mothers could place their babies, for often the poor women were ashamed to be seen handing their infants over to an institution. Sometimes they would pin a tiny keepsake to the baby's clothing, a coloured bead, a button, a little brooch. It was a way of identifying the child, should they suddenly acquire some money and wish to have the child back. Handel took a great interest in the hospital and gave many performances there. He gave all the money he collected to help the foundlings. From the General Advertiser, 19th of May, 1749, Hospital for the Maintenance and Education of Exposed and Deserted Young Children, May the 10th, 1749. George Frederick Handel, Esquire, having generously offered his assistance to promote this charity, on Thursday the 25th day of May at 12 o'clock at noon, there will be a grand performance of vocal and instrumental music under his direction, consisting of several pieces composed by him. First, the music for the Royal Fireworks. 2 days later, the Foundling Hospital was honoured by a visit by their Royal Highnesses the Prince and Princess of Wales, with several other members of the royal family. It is reported that more than 1,000 people attended, each paying half a guinea to hear Mr. Handel's music. And the King sent £2,000 for the hospital to show his appreciation of Mr. Handel's music for the Royal Fireworks. And to this day, Handel's music for the Royal Fireworks continues to give pleasure whenever it is played. Whenever I hear it, I cannot help smiling as I think of all the exciting things that happened when it was first performed in 1749. How about you?
for the Royal Fireworks was not the first major work that Handel wrote for a ceremonial occasion involving King George II. King George I had set off for Germany and had been taken ill in his coach. He died in the same room where he had been born, in Osnabrück, on June 11, 1727. 3 days later, on June the 15th, his son was proclaimed King George II of England. The coronation was planned for October the 11th at Westminster Abbey, and Mr. Handel was asked to compose 4 anthems to be played during the service. 1 week before the coronation, the following notice appeared in Parker's Penny Post. Mr. Handel has composed the music for the Abbey at the coronation, and the Italian voices, with above 100 of the best musicians, will perform. It will be rehearsed this week, but the time will be kept private, lest the crowd of people should be an obstruction to the performers. The authorities tried to keep the time of the rehearsal secret, but the news got out nevertheless, and so many people attended that the weekly journal described the gathering as the greatest concourse of people ever known. The most famous of the 4 coronation anthems is Zadok the Priest. It is an important part of the ceremony and is played at the coronation of all the kings and queens of England. The sound of the orchestra and chorus fills the great Westminster Abbey, where Handel himself is buried in Poet's Corner.
Thank you.
Thank you again to the Carter Family Charitable Trust and Andrew Liatsis. See you next time.
See you next time, everyone.
Wow, that was so fun. I wonder what we'll hear next time. Thank you for listening to WCRI's Classical Kids Hour. Gotta go. The concert hall doors are about to close. See you next time.
WCRI's Classical Kids Hour is sponsored in part by the Newport Music Festival with generous support from the Carter Family Charitable Trust.